Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Today is June 3rd, 2026. Time is certainly flying. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 50,687, the NASDAQ at 26,853, and the S&P at 7,553. Our topic tonight is updates on education funding. This is part two to last week's show, and we're going to talk about the FAFSA form. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Cindy and Bob are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And you can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Cindy and they'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, just as a reminder, last week we talked about it being like National 529 Day and using 529s for education funding. And that's the Internal Revenue Code section that governs that. That podcast is available on WDIY.org or yourfinancialchoices.com or on many streaming services if you want more information on that. Tonight, I thought I would focus a little bit on the FAFSA form. And to be honest, this is not an area of expertise for me in any way. But the beauty of this show is if we have topics we're interested in or want to learn more about, then, you know, shoot over a topic to me and I'll do what I can to get some information to you. As always, this is just general education. I may not be able to hit on all the nuances of the FAFSA and or student loans, but I thought I could, you know, try to take maybe the fear out of it a little bit by giving you just some information to kind of give you the confidence if it's applicable to you to be able to do that. To frame this out, let me start by saying that financial aid is not always what one might think it is. I don't know if this is going back to when, you know, people of my generation were young and filing for financial aid or, you know, where this comes from. But often people think financial aid might be like free aid. It's really not that common for someone to get free aid. But financial aid could come in the form of free, you know, student loans. There's something called subsidized student loans, unsubsidized student loans. There's work study. There are sometimes something called a Pell Grant. That is something that you wouldn't have to pay back. So I'm going to try to kind of like give you some framework for this. But again, quite often people aren't really getting the free aid. In fact, I'll just tell you that example now. I had an example for the Pell Grant. The Pell Grant is the one that is awarded to undergraduate students who display exceptional financial need, have not earned a bachelor's, graduate, or professional degree. It says in some cases, however, a student enrolled in a post-baccalaureate teacher certification program or an eligible workforce program might receive a federal Pell Grant. But, you know, it's limited to, again, only to undergraduate students who display exceptional financial need. It does not have to be repaid except under special circumstances. And Pell Grants for 26 to 2027 academic year, it's a maximum of $7,395. You heard me say maximum. It doesn't mean you're going to get that. It depends on your student aid index as calculated by the FAFSA, cost of attendance, if it's full or part-time, if it's for a full year, and then there's also a lifetime eligibility. And you have to do the FAFSA every year to qualify. But here's the example. The example is single-parent family of four in New York would have to have income less than $70,000 in New York. A single-parent family of four. That means a single parent with three kids. A family of four making less than $70,000 in New York may qualify for the Pell Grant. That was an example. So you can kind of see where, you know, it's not like free aid that people might have once thought financial aid was. The other thing that happens is you have to look at assets, you have to look at income. So there's so many factors that go into determining financial aid. But do we still want to fill out that doggone FAFSA form? Sounds like maybe a little bit of a pain. And there really could be circumstances where it might not make sense for, you know, certain people, but it still may make sense for some people, or probably even most people who have a student who's going to a college, whether it's a state school or a private college or an out-of-state college. It still may be worth it for you because there may be attractive loan options for you if you need a little bit of help in covering the cost of the student's college expenses. I will say things have changed over the years. Back when I was a college student, my first year I was a dependent on my parents' tax return. And I thought I was working, I had my own money, I was having to pay for my own college. And I thought, well, why am I dependent on my parents? I might as well just file independent. And back then, way back then, I could file independent of my parents. That was allowed back then. I said, my parents aren't paying for anything. I'm working. Blah, blah, blah. So I fill out the FAFSA form thinking I'm going to get more aid because basically I'm a poor student working part-time. And I did not get any aid. In fact, my aid went down. For context, I'm one of six children. So when I still had a couple siblings in college when I started college. So my aid went down and I actually had to cover more of my own education costs. Now, I was in a private college for my first year and part of my second year, and then I transferred to the public university. And when I transferred to the public university, of course, in-state school, it was much more affordable and I could afford it. And what I ended up doing were like short-term loans directly with the college. I don't know if they even do that anymore, but I wasn't taking out the same kind of student loans I had been. I was doing it through this program with the college where I would pay as I went along. But I came out of college still with tons of student loan debt because my freshman year at that private college and part of my sophomore year was only covered in small amounts for grants that I had received for financial aid, small amounts. So I still came out of college with quite a bit of debt. But, you know, it is what it is. That college education got me where it did. So I always think it's worth it regardless. But just be cognizant of the career that you choose when you're taking on certain debt and where you're going to college. Pay attention, really, if you're helping your students, your, you know, dependent children or your grandchildren decide where they're going to go to college and what they're going to study. You know, let's keep in mind the return on that investment when you're going to college. So when we come back from this first break, I'm going to start talking about the FAFSA form in particular and why we want to fill out the FAFSA form even if we don't think we might qualify for aid. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds. A powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 4.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or give your question to Cindy and I can answer it off air or when you're off air. And it can be about topics other than tonight's topic. Tonight we are talking about the FAFSA form. It's kind of part two to my show last week talking about 529 plans and college funding and scholarships and tax credits and things like that. Everything related to education last week. Tonight talking more about loans and student aid. So the FAFSA form is the free application for federal student aid. That's how they come up with FAFSA, free application for federal student aid. You do not have to pay for it to apply. And it says you're gaining access to the largest source of federal student aid to help pay for college, career school, or trade school. It includes federal grants, such as the Pell Grant, which I mentioned, work-study funds, and federal student loans. And work study, by the way, that I did do work study as well when I was on my parents' FAFSA. I didn't get work study after that when I went independent and I was working anyway, three jobs. So, in fact, I think at one point, three jobs. It was a little bit crazy, hard to go to school when you work in three jobs, but I did it. It's how we had to do it back then. So the free application for federal student aid. And what you have to do, what's interesting to me is, you know, you think you're going to go on the FAFSA and start filling out the FAFSA, but then they tell you have to go to another website to establish your student aid account. So what I would say is the first step you're going to do is establish studentaid.gov account. And how do you do that? You go to that website, studentaid.gov/create-account. So you have links to all of this if you go to the FAFSA website, and the FAFSA website is FAFSA.gov. And, you know, once you do the student aid account, then you go to the FAFSA and set that up. But if you go to the FAFSA and you hadn't set up the student aid account, they're going to tell you to go back to the student aid account. This is why I think it gets confusing. I don't understand why they don't just combine them. Why do they have to have two different sites? I'm not sure. So you establish the student aid account, but here's the other little, you know, asterisk, the important part. You go and you create an account on studentaid.gov, and who has to do that? The dependent student has to do it, plus any contributor. Oh, what is any contributor? Well, I would imagine when we're talking about student aid that the contributor would be anybody who might be helping with the, you know, student aid. No, not exactly. The contributors are parents, parent singular or parents plural, or a spouse, or anyone whose federal tax information will be used for the financial aid application, and who will then have to provide consent to use this information. So when I say anyone whose federal tax information may be used, today we know that there are often grandparents who are taking care of their grandchildren or have them, you know, responsibility for them and meet the guidelines for claiming those grandchildren as dependents. You may also have a niece or a nephew who you may have as a dependent that you're taking care of. And if you are claiming them as a dependent, then you are someone who would be considered a contributor, and you would have to provide your information on the student aid and FAFSA form. So I'll go into that in a little bit. Now, I've been giving websites for people to go to. I said studentaid.gov, FAFSA.gov. There is a feature that you can print the form, the FAFSA form out, and it's like a PDF. You fill it out with ink, and then you mail it in. There are some limitations to that. Number one, it might not be as fast. Number two, I think you still have to consent for the IRS to provide the tax information from your tax returns to the FAFSA. But you can also only limit how many schools you can list on that FAFSA form. I'll talk about what that means in a minute. So you want to establish the account on studentaid.gov, and then anyone who would be considered a contributor, as I mentioned, would also have to set up a studentaid.gov account. I did not understand that before, so I'm glad we're going through this exercise for the show tonight. So then you can go, now that you've established your studentaid.gov account, you go into FAFSA.gov, and you start the FAFSA form. And I think there's links for all of this, lots and lots of links, lots and lots of information. But I think when you go in there, personally, I felt like it was super overwhelming. And I think once you realize it kind of will take you through the questions and prompts, it's not as scary, but you do have to start somewhere. So you start the FAFSA form. And at the same time you're in the FAFSA.gov website, you have to log into the studentaid.gov account. So have your username and password, you know, handy, so you're not like getting up and running around. The student or parent, again, are going into the FAFSA.gov website to do this. And you want to make sure that you have all the documents you needed that it's going to request information from. So you heard me say something about the IRS transferring the tax information. They will do that automatically. We used to have to enter that information on those FAFSA forms manually, or, you know, type it in once it all went online. But now they can transfer it automatically. But that is your tax information. That doesn't mean they have all of your information. So what other kind of documents do you need? I said that the tax information may be needed. The tax returns, even though they're going to transfer the information, there still could be information from there that you might need. They are looking to see if you have any child support, if the parent has child support that they're receiving, I believe, not necessarily paying. I'm not sure about that. It's if it's applicable. Your current balances in your bank accounts, and that would be whether it's the student or the parents, and the net worth of investments, businesses, or farms. That does not include retirement accounts. And I don't know if people ever get confused about that, but it doesn't include your retirement accounts. When we say investments, it usually means, you know, a joint account or your individual account. The parent's social security number, marital status of the parents, as of the day you fill out the form. So if you fill out the form, on, what's today, June 3rd, and the FAFSA form uses your tax information from 2024, believe it or not, for the filing for 26-27 academic year. It's going back to your 24 tax return. Your parents may have been married in 2024, and perhaps they are no longer married. It's the day you file the form that you indicate the marital status. So if they are no longer married, you say single. For 2026-27, I said they use your 24 information. So if you did have a change, you may have to contact the school So you're filling out a FAFSA form with the government, but it's the school. And I'm going to tell you about how many schools you might enter. I guess it would be the one you want to go to the most. So if you've had a change in circumstances, that could be just the income changes, and that you would communicate with the school. But your, because the financial information may change for the parents, but it could also be that change in marital status could change what kind of information you're reporting, okay? Folks, we are at the second break already. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org. WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We're talking about Part 2, Education Planning, the FAFSA form. Let me also mention that there are deadlines for filing the FAFSA form, but bottom line, let's not think about deadlines. Let's just think about filing it as soon as you can. So as soon as your student has an idea of what they need, or sorry, where they're going to go, you want to get that FAFSA form started. It says the federal deadline for the 2026-2027 FAFSA is June 30th, 2027. So that means, you know, perhaps maybe even if someone's going to go to school in the fall of 27, that's why you have till June 30th, 27. Not sure. It seems a little late to be filing. But, you know, just putting this into, you know, one of the online resources, why the deadlines matter is because you're juggling three different types of deadlines. You have the college deadlines. They have priority deadlines in early spring to award limited institutional grants. You don't want to miss out on that. That could be free money. State deadlines, often they're the strictest, very widely. And then federal deadlines for the federal student aid. So just basically file as soon as you can. And so you kind of want to have an idea of what schools your child's going to go to. So 26-27 academic year, you could be filing, you know, for that now. And again, one of the reasons you still want to file, even if you think you might not qualify for financial aid, particularly if your student is applying to a private college, as even that little article mentioned, private colleges may give academic awards that you do not have to pay back. That's different than a loan. It's different than the Pell Grant. It might just be an academic award. Our oldest daughter got some very attractive academic awards. She was a very top student and, you know, was given a nice chunk of money, and it was an academic award. They were trying to attract her to come to the college where she went. So that is sometimes factored in by completing that FAFSA form. The colleges use that for, you know, determining those awards. So the sooner you get in, the more awards that may be available, and then they kind of dry up if you're like the last one in. So important for that reason too. Typically, I think that some of the federal aid is, you know, looking at, or state aid could be, you know, state colleges too, not just, you know, private schools. So you want to get this information entered. So you select the student. Once you're in the FAFSA, you've done the studentaid.gov account. You've gone into FAFSA.gov. Now you log in with the login information credentials from the studentaid.gov account. You select the student, and then you start the FAFSA form. And it usually starts with the student identity information. And it really should be populated from the studentaid.gov account. So you want to verify it, make sure it's all correct, make any changes to that identity. If you need to make changes, guess what? Where are you going to have to go? Studentaid.gov account to update it. So it just seems a little clunky to me. I really hope maybe someone hears this and says, hey, we didn't realize it was so complicated. Let's streamline it. And then I had a note here. If a required contributor doesn't provide consent and approval to have their federal tax information transferred into the FAFSA form, you, the student, will not be eligible for federal student aid, even if the contributor manually enters the tax information into the FAFSA form. So if you have someone who's like a little gun shy and they think, I don't want this information out there, and they don't want to fill it, and they think they're going to, you know, circumvent, you know, the IRS from transferring that information to FAFSA, well, guess what then? Your student might not be eligible for that federal student aid. You can't do it manually. You have to give permission for it to be grabbed. Additionally, for the student identity information, you enter the state of residence and the date you became a resident. That would be important for, again, in-state tuition type of classification or information. Certain states will require you to be living in the state for a particular period of time for that in-state tuition, if that factors into this at all. You know, I'm not really sure how this all works together, but you have to say the date you became the resident. I have a step three. I made up an Excel spreadsheet with all these steps. To provide the consent for the tax information, you have to authorize transfer of the information from the IRS. As I said, that is for any of the contributors, that the parents, spouse, you know, whomever is claiming you may be as a dependent. You have to authorize that transfer of information, but it's also the student's information as well, because the student's income and or assets also come into play for the financial aid. We used to call it the expected family contribution. You know, as I was going through this, I didn't see that moniker, expected family contribution, but that's what it was always calculating, you know, based on these assets, based on this income, this is how much aid we would expect you would need if you have a shortfall in what the, you know, the cost of the education is. And of course, the cost of the education all depends on which colleges you're entering into the system to say you want to go, because a smaller state school might cost, you know, $12,000, and then the big state schools might cost, you know, $40,000, and a private school might cost $90,000. So it all kind of has to be entered and factored in there. As part of identifying this information, we also have an opportunity to talk about the personal circumstances within the form. It may give you prompts for those questions. So you want to answer questions relating to the family. Are you military? Is a parent military? What are the family relationships? Is there dependency? And might there be eligibility for that federal aid, as I mentioned, such as the Pell Grant, beyond federal aid, as in federal student loans? Then you can also talk about unusual circumstances. So note if there's something preventing the student from contacting the parents. That could be important if you have a student who's been kind of kicked to the curb, or, you know, maybe comes out of the foster care system and no longer has a home. They're independent. They don't know their parents. They don't have anyone who's helping support them. Those would be circumstances where the student would be filing for the financial aid on their own record and would not have any other contributors or contributor information that they would have to enter. So that is where you would mention, you know, unusual circumstances as well. And then, of course, you have to enter the schools. And you have to list at least one school using, there's a school search link on there. So if you don't know the exact name of the school or whatever it might be, or you hadn't thought about any schools yet, but you still want to get that financial aid application in, just pick a school. There's a link. You search for it, pick a school. So that is how you become eligible for, you know, potential financial aid. You can list up to 20 when you're doing it online, but they do receive your information automatically. So if you've listed 20 schools, 20 schools are going to receive your information. So personally, I would, you know, try to, you know, get that down to really just the schools you're serious about. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Or if you have show ideas, please call, share those with Cindy. You don't even have to talk to me. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
We're going to return to your financial choices with host Lori Siebert, and I was thinking, I remember doing all my kids' FAFSAs all those years. What a task. You really have to know your paperwork.
Yes, that's for sure.
That's for sure. This is great information.
And to Norm's point, welcome back, folks. And to Norm's point about he, as the parent, was filling it out for his children. I remember I said I was one of six. My parents, you know, sat there and just told me what numbers to enter. I had to do all the paperwork myself. I was lucky I got the information from my parents.
Well, I'm just older than you are, so I didn't have to do a FAFSA.
Okay. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can call and share ideas of stories or show topics you'd like me to cover. If you have questions, you could talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. So kind of going through this FAFSA, we said step one, establish studentaid.gov account, and that is on studentaid.gov/create/account. Then you have to go into your FAFSA.gov account at the exact same time with your student aid information, you know, credentials, username, password, select student, start the FAFSA form, go through the student identity information, enter your state of residence, the date you became a resident, provide consent for the tax information. And by the way, this is the student and those folks I said were contributors, which could be a parent, parents plural, spouse, or anyone whose federal tax information is going to be used to provide consent, etc. And then the student can go through personal circumstances or unusual circumstances and then enter all the schools that they would like the information shared with. Again, up to 20 schools. Personally, when I went to college, I applied to one college. You know, back in the day, you also had to pay for those application fees. I was paying for it myself. I applied to one college and got into that one college. That's the one that cost me an arm and a leg. But anyway, so, you know, be mindful of that. So this is not applying to the college. This is simply letting the schools know your financial information so they can calculate what kind of financial aid they would give you or what financial aid awards would be available to your student if they do then apply and if then they do get accepted, all right? So the FAFSA is not applying to the college. It's just letting the government know they can transmit that information to the schools because it's the school who is determining, you know, the loans, et cetera, and the aid that the student is getting. So once you've done that, you have to acknowledge the terms and conditions, and you can electronically sign and submit the FAFSA forms. And all contributors have to go through these steps. So complete the same steps above to provide the information and authorize and consent. And again, you have to enter that financial information along the way too. So I don't know what step that comes in, but you do have to put that information in. So then what happens? I said that information gets submitted to whatever schools you've indicated. I'm not exactly sure which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Like, do you apply to the colleges, then fill out the FAFSA? Probably, as I'm thinking about this. Usually we're looking at acceptances like in May. There's some early acceptances, maybe March, April, May of, let's say, 2026, and you're deciding where you're going to school or accepting those by May. Just for a little perspective, my daughter was offered a full ride, my middle daughter, in her junior year of college. She was offered a full athletic scholarship, and we did have to still fill out a FAFSA form for her, even though we weren't expecting any financial aid, but the college just required it. And I think we only had to do it the first year, but it was required. So typically when you're getting courted by a particular college, whether it's athletic or academic, they should also be able to help guide you in what you need to do and what you need to complete and by when. Because as I said, my oldest daughter was, courted, I think, with a very substantial academic award. All right. So, but it could require you to fill out the FAFSA. One of the other reasons we did the FAFSA with my oldest daughter was because we wanted her, you know, we're new, you know, parents. We have three kids. She was our first. And, you know, he tried to act all responsible. And he said, you know, you have to have skin in the game. Now, why we would have ever doubted our daughter, who was, like, brilliant, why we would ever have doubted, you know, her commitment to education. She soaked it up like a sponge, could not get enough of it. We said, though, you have to have skin in the game. So we did have our oldest daughter do the FAFSA form and get loans. So even though you do not have a financial need, you still may be eligible for student loans through the, you know, federal student aid. But there are two different kinds. So we have something called the direct subsidized loans, and we have the direct unsubsidized loans. So let me first talk about the unsubsidized loans, because that's what our daughter had. So if when they fill out the FAFSA form, there really isn't a financial need, you still are eligible for loans. And I'm just realizing now, I don't know if I have those dollar amounts, but I think it's up to like seven. I have it somewhere. I'll get it at the next break. The numbers go up every year. But you can be eligible for a unsubsidized loan, which means even if you do not have a financial need, you have access to a loan, so you're not having to go to a bank that may or may not charge you a higher rate. And the difference between subsidized and unsubsidized is the unsubsidized means you can take out this loan. This is the student, by the way. The student is taking out the loan. The student has this obligation, and it is accruing interest on that loan. But the difference between going to like a bank and getting a loan versus these federal student loans is the student can defer the interest. That is different than if you go to the bank, you have to start paying right away. With a federal student loan that is unsubsidized, you have a period of time where you don't have to pay it back. And that's typically when you're in college, you're getting your degree. I think you have to be going a particular amount, like half-time student. And even after you're finished college, you don't have to start paying it back for 6 months after you finish. Okay, so there's like a bit of a deferment. But the unsubsidized is accruing interest during that same deferred period. So if you have an unsubsidized loan, and let's pretend it's $7,000 for your first year, it's accruing interest, but you don't have any requirement to pay it back. All right. You can pay the interest, but you don't have to pay the interest, but the interest accrues. So what we did for our daughter, for example, we said, okay, you're going to take out this student loan. It's unsubsidized, but mom and dad are going to pay the interest. So we didn't let the interest accrue on the loan. Otherwise, it would have been what we call capitalized. That interest, if our daughter had deferred it and didn't pay the interest, the loan would have gotten bigger and bigger. So $7,000 would have turned into, I'm going to make this up, you know, $7,500, and then $7,000, you know, $8,000, then $8,600, $9,000. So that loan would continue to grow during those 4 years of college if she wasn't paying the student loan interest. So we paid the student loan interest. So when she came out of college, she would have only been responsible for the principal amount that she originally took out. Now, Do you think our daughter had to pay those loans when she came out? No, because we did pay it for her. But we just wanted to make sure, you know, like skin in the game. We wanted to make sure she was committed. She was, you know, working really hard at school. She took on, she didn't have work study, but she took on being a resident advisor at a dorm. That gave her a huge tuition offset, which some people may not realize. If your child needs a little bit of extra help and maybe they don't want to do it through student loans, you could be a resident advisor. And that wasn't income taxable to her, but it just helped offset the tuition. So it was a great, great thing. She did that for 2 years. The other thing she did is she became like an assistant to the professor, and she organized study sessions and review sessions for her professor, and actually held those same review sessions and study sessions for the students. And she did get paid for that. All right. So that all helped, you know, cover her college cost, as well as us helping to cover her college cost and the academic award. So unsubsidized loans, you don't have to pay them, which is different than private loans. So federal student loans that are unsubsidized, you don't have to pay them when you're in college and meet those qualifications. You can defer them. You can defer the interest, but the interest is accrued unless you want to pay it. And then you start payments on those 6 months after, you know, you basically finish college, and then you start paying them back. Okay. The subsidized loans do, the government is basically paying the interest on those. So you take out the loan. Let's pretend it's $7,000. And as I said, my daughters would have grown and grown and grown and could have been, you know, $9,000 at the end of the 4 years. I'm making that up. In a subsidized loan, there is no interest. It's not being accrued. The government covers it, and you come out of college with just whatever you took the loan out at. Now, who figures these out? So the direct subsidized loans, I told you, there has to be a financial need. And the school determines the amount, not more than the need itself. So if the school, it cost, let's pretend $20,000, and going through the FAFSA form, we find that the parents' assets and the parents' income and the kids' income and the kids' assets could cover, you know, $15,000 of it on a $20,000 cost. There would only be a $5,000 financial need. The school has determined that based on these formulas, and then they could determine whether it's going to be subsidized or not. So the U.S. Department of Education, again, then pays the interest while the student is in school at least half time, and then again for the first 6 months after you leave during that deferred period. For the unsubsidized loans, oh, and remember, the subsidized loans are just for undergrad. The unsubsidized loans can be undergrad, graduate, professional student, and there does not have to be a financial need. The school, again, determines this. The school student is responsible for interest during all those periods and during any deferment, and the interest accumulates and is added to the principal. Now, you heard me mention this is student loans. They're could also be an opportunity for a parent to get a loan, and that's called a parent plus loan. And the federal government, maybe perhaps you couldn't get a loan if you went to the bank and just said, hey, I need money for my kid's education. Maybe you don't own a home, and, you know, otherwise, you know, what are you going to use for security? Then going through these forms, the FAFSA form and the student aid accounts, it may be determined that you would be eligible for what we call a parent plus loan. So when we come back from this next break, I'll talk a tiny bit about that, a parent plus loan, and who can use those. And then I'll try to give you an idea of some of the interest rates when we come back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we're talking about the FAFSA form tonight. Last week, we talked about 529 accounts and education credits, really, really important education credits. So if you have a student or going to have a student, that really was a really good show to talk about that. The FAFSA is loans, and quite often you have to pay those loans back. It's not very often that we don't. That would be the Pell Grant. It has to be a tremendous financial need. So we've been talking about applying for student loans through the FAFSA form and the different kinds of loans you can have. So we have student loans that can be unsubsidized, subsidized. Some qualify for undergrad only, some for undergrad and grad and professional. And then beyond the student, parents may be able to also apply for loans. And so this was called the Parent Plus Loans. Plus Loan Applications allows you, the parent, to or I would assume the contributor in the story I had before, and this is from, by the way, I think it's from the FAFSA website. There's all kinds of links on the FAFSA website. So the Plus Loan application allows the parent, in this case, to request a Direct Plus Loan, change the amount of a Direct Plus Loan you previously requested, authorize how the school may use your Direct Plus Loan funds to pay for educational expenses, designate who the school pays any credit balance to, and request deferment of repayment while the student is in school and up for up to the 6 months after. So starting July 1st, 2026, though, there's new annual and aggregate loan limits that apply to Parent Plus loans. Your borrowing limit depends on whether your child qualifies for the limited exemption. If your child qualifies, you can continue borrowing up to the cost of attendance minus any other financial aid your child receives. If your child doesn't qualify, the maximum amount that can be borrowed by all parents is up to $20,000 per academic year and up to $65,000 over the course of the child's undergraduate study. Regardless of the amount you may be eligible to borrow, your child's school might limit the amount you may borrow based on the program of study and your child is enrolled in. So again, don't always think that you're going to be able to get loans for everything. Request a Direct Plus Loan. You can change the amount. Okay, I already had kind of said that. And I mentioned that, starting July 1st, 2026, Direct Plus Loans are no longer available to graduate or professional students unless you qualify for the limited exception. And to qualify, you must have been enrolled in your program of study as of June 30th, 2026, borrowed a direct loan for that program prior to July 1st, 2026, and remain continuously enrolled in the same program at the same school. They also note direct unsubsidized loans remain available to eligible graduate and professional students with updated loan amount limits. Graduate students who've never been professional students can borrow up to $20,500 per year with a $100,000 aggregate limit. Graduate students who've previously been professional students can borrow up to $20,500 per year with a $200,000 aggregate limit and less any amount borrowed as a professional student. So when I talk about professional students, there were so many links, you know, like you could spend all day just clicking links on the FAFSA site. I saw like doctor, engineer, I think, things like that, dentist, whatever it might be. So obviously those professional degrees quite often need a little bit more in loans. So other quick notes, work-study jobs, I mentioned that. Federal work-study program allows you to earn money to pay for school by working part-time. You'll earn at least the current federal minimum wage. However, you may earn more depending on the type of work you do and the school's skills required for the position. Your total work-study award depends on when you apply, your level of financial need, and your school's funding level. So, for example, when I was at the private college, my work-study job was called instructional services, and I used to set up movie night for the students, and I would set up any video needs for the professors, movies, communications, projectors, all of that kind of stuff back in the day when we had to do it that way. Scholarships, many nonprofit and private organizations offer scholarships to help students pay for college or career school. This type of aid, which is sometimes based on academic merit, talent, or a particular area of study, can make a real difference in helping you manage your education expenses. That's where I said, you know, you may still want to file a FAFSA form if it might help your student qualify for some of those scholarships, which would not have to be paid back. Loans. A loan is money you borrow, must pay back with interest, and I've already talked about that at length. Interest rates. Let's talk about the interest rates for a minute. The interest rates for direct subsidized loans and direct unsubsidized loans first disbursed on or after July 1st, 2025 and before July 1st of 2026 are 6.39% for undergraduate borrowers and 7.94% for graduate or professional borrowers. And it looks like that is for the undergraduate. It's direct subsidized loans and direct unsubsidized loans. And for the graduate or professional borrower, 7.94. And again, that's unsubsidized loans. The interest rates shown are fixed rates for the life of the loan. So just keep that in mind. There may be some loan fees as well. All direct subsidized loans and direct unsubsidized loans have loan fees, and it's a percentage of the loan amount and is proportionately deducted from each loan disbursement. The percentage for all direct subsidized and unsubsidized loans first disbursed on or after October 1st, 2020 is 1.057%. Loans first disbursed before that date had different loan fees. And again, to accept the loans, your school is going to tell you how to accept the loan. And if it's your first time receiving a direct loan, you will be required to complete entrance counseling, a tool to ensure you understand your obligation to repay the loan. Okay? They want to make sure people are repaying them. All right, so that is interest rates. The loan limits. When we talk about the loan limits, according to this One Big Beautiful Act that had some important definitions, this was updated after April 15th. It did result in changes to federal student aid programs, and some of the changes went into effect immediately, while others go into effect in 2026 and beyond. But they talk about annual loan limits, aggregate loan limits, and lifetime maximum loan limits. It's really almost too much to go into with the amount that of time I have left. But I will note that it says dependent undergraduate students, dependent meaning, you know, they're dependent on someone's tax return, dependent undergraduate students, unless your parent is unable to obtain a direct plus loan due to adverse credit, for the first year is $5,500. Not more than $3,500 can be subsidized. Okay? So don't think it's all going to be subsidized. Not more than $3,500 can be subsidized. The second year, limit goes up. It's $6,500, but not more than $4,500 can be subsidized. The third year and beyond is $7,500. Not more than $5,500 can be subsidized. Independent undergraduate students and dependent students, if your parents unable to, again, get the direct loan for adverse credit, that's a little higher for independent undergrad students. Remember, I said I could be independent. It's much stricter now. You may not be able to be independent just by deciding you're going to be independent. It's really if you have no contact with your parents or that you know, a guardian or whatever it might be. So your first year is a little higher. It's $9,500, but it has the same, not more than $3,500 can be subsidized. The second year is $10,500, not more than $4,500. The third year and beyond is $12,500. So it's a bit higher for independent students. That makes sense to me. Graduate students have a much higher amount. That can be $20,500, but it's unsubsidized only. And that's the total amount each year for unsubsidized loans. And the total amount each year for PLUS loans is the cost of attendance minus other aid, direct PLUS loans for graduate or professional borrowers only. And then, of course, there's professional students, which, you know, have a higher limits. Too much to go into. All right. So just know, filing for the FAFSA doesn't mean you're going to get all of the college costs covered. Certainly not free aid. Do it as soon as you can, as fast as you can. If you think your student may qualify for some academic scholarships at the school. And quite often you can talk to the school. I'll tell a quick story. My daughter was accepted into some pretty prestigious schools. And I told you the one that was, really trying to attract her gave her a really nice academic scholarship, and it made it like a no-brainer decision. But the really prestigious schools, we said, one gave her a very tiny scholarship. And we said, look at her accomplishments. Look at her grades. They said, everybody's smart. That was their answer at this prestigious school. Everybody's smart. And no, she wasn't going to get any more aid. Well, we certainly didn't go there. But and her decision ended up being really wonderful for her. And she had a great educational experience and met her husband the first week of college. And they are still very much together and very happy. So marry this topic of the FAFSA form and applying for financial aid. Marry this topic with last week's topic with 529 plans and all the education credits, because recall last week I talked about the student loan interest deduction if there is student loans. I got to tell you, that's super complicated too. And frankly, I actually don't have really like many clients that have student loan interest. So it's not like I know it off the top of my head. But I will say that the student, once you have to start paying back that interest, it could be a deduction for you. It is, taxpayers may deduct up to $2,500 of qualified student loan interest paid during the year. But the deduction is phased out if your income goes up between $85,000 and $100,000 if you're single, $175,000 and $205,000 if you're married filing joint. So quite often, once you're in the workforce or if you're still, on your parents' tax return, there may not be a deduction for that student loan interest. So I wouldn't count on that as being a big differentiator or why you'd want to take out a student loan. But more importantly, 529s can now be used to pay back some student loans up to $10,000, like once and done. So it's not like $10,000 a year, it's $10,000 toward a student loan. So that could be something to pay attention to. If your student comes out of college and they have a student loan for $10,000, and let's pretend you never had a 529 account, you could actually fund a 529 account with $10,000 and then pay the student loan if you're going to get some other tax benefits. So, for example, we air out of Pennsylvania. We have a 529. We can make a contribution to a 529, get a deduction on our Pennsylvania tax return, and, save a little bit of taxes for that expense. All right. So pay attention to those other benefits. Also, just because you had student loans, you think, I didn't pay tuition. You're still paying tuition because you have a loan. So don't think you're not eligible for all those education credits that I talked about last week, too. Make sure you're paying attention to that. If you otherwise wouldn't think you qualify because you use student loans to pay tuition, it's not the case. It's still like you're paying for it. So please consider if you otherwise would be eligible because of income, because you have a dependent child who's undergrad 4 years, you may qualify for some of those education credits like the American Opportunity Tax Credit. Or if you're perhaps an ongoing student or a graduate student, you may qualify for the Lifetime Learning Credit. So please pay attention to those or listen to, last week's show to get more information. Obviously, we can't cover all the little details of every little, resource out there, but we certainly hope that we're raising education for you, information awareness, so that you can go get the information that you need to help make the best of your financial decisions. Thank you, Cindy and Bob, for being here. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Norm, especially for coming in for us tonight. Next week, I am going to to talk about something. I'm going to talk about retirement benefits planning, pensions, rollovers, plan transitions. We have some plan transitions going on right now. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.